wolf on the hill is never as hungry as the wolf climbing the hill.
Lone wolf is a term commonly used by many people. It means that they used to belong to a group, but left, to become stronger. By thinking and acting alone, the lone wolf acquires superior cunning, agility, imagination and skills unknown to members of the pack. The lone wolf is independent of and distances itself from the petty bickerings, expectations, demands, mediocrities and unfulfilled dreams of other people, groups or organizations. The lone wolf is often branded as the rebel,
for it is the sovereign lone wolf who stands alone in all of his or her glory. You are listening to Lone Wolf Radio, presented and hosted by Tom Metzger. Tom is now broadcasting from a newly relocated and improved bunker in an undisclosed location with internet access across the globe. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode on Lone Wolf Radio.
To contact Tom Metzger, you may address your mail to 1281 North State Street, San Jacinto, that's S-A-N-J-A-C-I-N-T-O, California, 92583, and we'll get it. Well, today we're going to delve into this book that was written, or at least the ideas that were in the book that were written about Hitler's Jewish soldiers, which I don't know whether you read it, but it was quite revealing, and it has to do with a lot of what I say about the mixture of Jewish and Aryan people in Germany that were probably the target of the Zionists prior to World War II and during World War II, which hasn't gotten much play, but that's what I believe happened. And so many of these people didn't even know they had any Jewish in their family, didn't even know it, were dragged off to concentration camps. And so this one-size-fits-all thing that Hitler used, I think, was a total tragedy and a mistake. I'm going to play you about one story about a Jewish National Socialist here, and see what you think.
Werner Goldberg, October 3rd, 1990. October 3rd, 1990.
Werner Goldberg, October 3rd, 1919. September 28th, 2004, was a German who was of half-Jewish ancestry, or Mischling in Nazi terminology, who served briefly as a soldier during World War II and whose image appeared in the Berliner Tageblatt as the ideal German soldier, and his image was later used in recruitment posters for the Wehrmacht. 1935 Nuremberg laws classed persons with three Jewish grandparents as Jewish, those with two Jewish grandparents would be considered Jewish only if they practiced the faith or had a Jewish spouse. Therefore, Werner Goldberg was considered citation needed an Aryan German by Nazi authorities because of his German non-Jewish mother. Goldberg's father grew up in Königsberg as a member of the Jewish community, but he had himself baptized in the local Lutheran church as he wished to become assimilated and marry a Christian one. After Hitler became Chancellor of Germany in 1933, Mr. Goldberg lost his position under the Nazi Law of April 1933, Law for the Restoration of the Professional Civil Service, which expelled Jews from the German civil service. Goldberg left school in 1935 and became an apprentice at Schneller und Schmieder, a clothing company jointly owned by a Jew and a non-Jew, where many of his colleagues were Jews or Mischling. Goldberg's maternal uncle joined the Nazi Party and refused to be seen with the Goldberg family, even avoiding Goldberg's mother. At the beginning of 1938, Goldberg served a six-month term in the Reich Labor Service, whose uniform, as Goldberg later recalled, had a swastika on an armband. On December 1, 1938, Goldberg joined the German army. He took part in the invasion of Poland on September 1, 1939, serving alongside childhood friend Karl Wolff, whose father was now a high-ranking SS officer. Shortly after the beginning of the war, Goldberg's photograph appeared in the Sunday edition of the Berliner Tagesblatt newspaper with the caption "The Ideal German Soldier." The photograph had been sold to the newspaper by the official army photographer. It was later used on recruitment posters. In 1940, following the armistice with France, Goldberg was expelled from the army under Hitler's order of April 8, 1940, which stated that all first-degree Mischling were to be expelled from the military. He returned to his former workplace, which had now changed its name to the Pfeiffer Schmieder Company, having been obliged to remove the Jewish name Schneller. Goldberg played an increasingly more responsible role within the company, obtaining contracts for uniforms from the Army and the Navy. He also attended the Reich Board of Labor Studies School, Reichsausschuss für Arbeitsstudie, where he was one of 4 out of 80 students who passed the test to become a RFA teacher. He then became a Labor Studies Board lecturer on the clothing business, and delivered lectures to organizations and company directors, even publishing an article in the weekly trade publication Textilwoche. In December 1942, Goldberg's father was admitted to the Bavaria Hospital. The Gestapo, however, raided the hospital and sent him to a Jewish hospital which had been requisitioned by the Gestapo for use as prison, from which Jews were taken and sent to Auschwitz. On Christmas Eve, gambling that the guards would be drunk or absent, Goldberg took his father from the hospital. Mr. Goldberg was soon back in the hands of the Gestapo and in April 1943 was summoned for deportation, but Goldberg told him not to show up and he was again saved. He became the only member of Goldberg's family to survive the war. Goldberg died in Berlin on September 28, 2004. He was survived by his wife Gertrude Goldberg, and 3 children. Two Goldberg's story formed part of the 2006 documentary Hitler's Jewish Soldiers, a 58-minute film produced by Larry Price in association with the Israel Broadcasting Authority. Price was inspired by the 2002 book Hitler's Jewish Soldiers by Brian Mark Rigg. Goldberg featured in an episode of the Yesterday TV series Nazi Collaborators, first screened in the UK in December 2010. In 2015, the photograph was used for the Monument to Protectors of Motherland in Tobolsk, Russia, as surrogate for an image of a Red Army soldier, reportedly by mistake. The image on the monument was promptly fixed.
The problem is when you mix up religion, when you're trying to determine race, you're making a horrible mistake, which is quite obvious if you think about it. Now, you can quit being a Baptist, you can quit being a Catholic, even though they'll argue with you about it, you can quit being any of these religions that are Christian, and you can quit being a Christian. So why cannot you quit being a Jew? Well, to me, I look at Jews as a racial thing, of course. Not Jewish Christian. I look at them and see, do they look Asian? Do they look Mongol? Do they look non-white of any kind? Black? Partially black? Like that. And that's the way I look at these people. But if they are Aryan and observed to be Aryan looking, and, you know, most blue eyes and all that kind of stuff, then whatever they want to be, they're going to be. Now, if they want to become a devious, crooked Jew, well, they can go under the name of a Jew. But my position is if they look like a duck, walk like a duck, act like a duck, they're a duck. So if a guy is, the people are asking me all the time, they say I got some other racial blood in my veins. Well, like the guy that says I'm part Indian, I say, well, I look at them and I say, you have a nosebleed, you get kicked out of the tribe. So we have, but the trouble is, the right wing keeps going with this stuff to where a very jingoist type attitude and way of deciding who is white and who is not white, or who is Aryan and who is not Aryan. The Germans did some very good things along these lines, but they did some very crazy things along these lines too. And it led to the death of a lot of people who were really genetically on their side. And so I've talked about this before. I know it's confusing, but the politics confuses it, and religious people confuse it, Christian and Jewish fanatics and so forth. So beyond that, you look at a person, what they do, judge them by what they do. If they're a crook, they're a crook. If they're a warmonger, they're a warmonger. If they're whatever they are, they are. And no matter what race they are, either. So we've got to get away from this old-fashioned right-wing position and judge people. Look at them. Does he look white? Yeah. Does he act white? Yeah. Does he think white? Yeah. Well, my God, he's white. That's my opinion, which my opinion is not always saluted, so I'll leave the rest up to you. Because there's a lot to this story. It had a lot to do with the crazy stuff about all the Jews that got killed, because there's a hell of a lot of them would not even be considered Jews, you know? Now, if Hitler would have stuck to the, as I recall, the original idea of getting the Jews out of Germany, I mean real Jews, I mean, you know, these Ashkenazim Jews, you can tell by looking at them, and just got those people out of Germany and let them go over to Israel or Palestine or whatever, but, you know, it's up to the Palestinians if they want to accept them. But they tried to do this one size fits all, and then got their tit caught in a ringer and built these concentration camps as holding places for these Jews. And then it became very difficult or impossible to transship them across to Palestine. and they just backed up there and the whole bit. And then adopting the idea, well, we just got to kill them all or kill as many as we can, was crazy. But I still hear Hollywood Nazis and right-wingers going into this, we got to kill every Jew or anybody that people say is a Jew. We got to get rid of them all. Well, why don't you start by getting rid of the bad ones, just like the bad Christians and the bad atheists or whatever, and deal in facts, and then do what you're going to do. Remember, Commander Rockwell used the term, well, that guy is a tame Jew, as opposed to a real Asiatic-looking nasty Jew. You should judge the Christians in the same way. Well, that guy, as far as they're so much different, really, than what we believe in, that it's too much. So you can say Christians that want to work with racial separatists are tame Jews. Tame Christians. So let's put the same rule of thumb to these other people as we do ourselves. I used to know a man back in, where was it? Oh yeah, it was down here in Fallbrook, California. There was sort of a junk man. An old guy who dealt in salvage. And he told me, I'm a Jew. But he didn't look like a Jew. He was a hard-working guy. He was a blue-collar guy. And he laughed about it. He hated the rabbis. And he admitted to me that he had stood on the same stage as Gerald L. K. Smith and damned the rabbis and the Orthodox Jews. So now, would I put him in a gas chamber or hang him or kill him? Of course not. He was a good man. If you were given an exclusive access to Russian President Vladimir Putin, how would you make use of that time? Filmmaker Oliver Stone had an interesting answer to that question. Show him Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove. Yes, really. As the Washington Post reported, Stone interviewing Putin for the upcoming Showtime feature, quote, The Putin Interviews, unquote, showed the former KGB agent Kubrick's famous Cold War satire. Putin apparently had never previously seen it. To learn how he responded, we'll have to wait for the Putin Interviews, which will air in 4-hour-long segments beginning June 12th. To catch scenes of the screening, Stone previously interviewed Cuba's Fidel Castro and Venezuela's Hugo Chavez, both leaders who had strained the relations with the United States. As far as we know, with them he kept Dr. Strangelove in the vaults. What would Kubrick think of the rendezvous? We'll never know, but it's a good excuse to return to Dr. Strangelove, if only you know to look for clues. That's a movie I think everybody should watch, even though it's a satire. It is a very serious and biting satire on the stupidity and fallacy and stupidness of warfare, especially atomic warfare, especially this playing games with this little Cupid doll over there in North Korea. Remember, the First World War started with just a small incident of an assassination of some monarchs over there in Eastern Europe who had very little power, but they were connected to the Hungarian Austrian Empire. But it shows you it doesn't take much. Just put the gas around on the ground and pretty soon somebody will come along and flip a match. The Frenchman Rousseau had a theory of civilization, but thought, quote, we're not fallen angels, but risen apes, unquote. That's cool. Just remember, boys and girls, it's not religious superstition, it's not Judaism, it's not Christianity, which is just plain an extension of Judaism and all that stuff, and so is the Islam. That's all superstition. That means very little. Race is the issue. period, because it's a provable thing and it's something you can see every day. And so forget that all this mixture of religious, because it's all superstition, boys and girls. Speaking of superstition, which most of the stories that come out of the Middle East, especially Israel, I don't believe one word of it, especially the ancient stories they tell. Now, President Trump's first foreign trip as president later this month will take him to Israel. Isn't that interesting? And he wants the ultimate photo op, tentatively scheduled to arrive in Israel on May 22nd, Trump is expected to lay out some terms for what we see a peaceful future in that region, unquote, an administration official told the Jerusalem Post. You see the personality of this guy working out. He thinks he's going to walk on water. He can solve anything by using business practices and so forth. He wants to go over there and stand on the top of Masada, which is, I was over there and saw it. It's just a big, well, it's not a big mountain, but it's bigger than, it's a big hill, let's put it that way, in which the story goes that all these Jewish soldiers that were fighting the Romans so valiantly jumped off and committed suicide. I don't believe it. Okay, let's see here. In fact, like Henry Ford used to say, history is bunk. Well, most of it is, because most of it comes out of newspapers. They write books based on newspaper articles and so forth. Israel's Channel 2 News reported that the White House's advanced travel team requested that the speech take place at Masada, the ancient desert fortress where thousands of Jews, somebody may have committed suicide, but I don't think it's the Jews as you know them, committed suicide rather than submit themselves to foreign rule. Like I say, another story. Trump's first appearance will come shortly before the 50th anniversary of the reunification of Jerusalem, which they screwed the Palestinians out of, which according to the Hebrew calendar begins on May 23rd. Trump will start his trip in Saudi Arabia on May 19th. Did you catch that? His trip to Saudi Arabia on May 19th, where he will convene a meeting of Arab world leaders to discuss the future of the region. Even though he of all people should know that the Saudi Arabians were behind the Twin Towers destruction. And they've never done anything about that. And people are trying to sue those victims, or families of the victims are trying to sue those Saudis. Those Saudis should be all lined up and shot. If the Nuremberg trials meant anything, then how come the Saudis are not lined up and shot? This may square with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu call for a regional approach to Israeli-Palestinian peace when he visited the White House in February. Well, there's not going to be any peace, because war is too much fun and too profitable. They make too much goddamn money. As long as there's big profit in war, they're going to keep it going. After Saudi Arabia and Israel, Trump will travel to the Vatican, another scam, to meet with Pope Francis, and then attend a NATO meeting, another scam meeting, in Belgium, and the G7 summit in Italy. Well, I hope the anarchist boys tear the shit out of that G7 summit, just for fun. Visiting all these places is just symbolic of men building power. He's building power, and he's visiting all these places to ensure that he's going to be written down in history as the Great White Father. I got stuck on a Christian tour over there in Israel. I should have taken the pagan or atheist tour. But I'm telling you, every 5 minutes you stop at a place and they claim all this shit happened and all these miracles happened. And I'm back there trying to keep from laughing and trying to keep from telling them you're full of shit. Because it didn't happen. And even Jewish academics now have researched that most of those fabulous stories didn't happen. I was out on the Lake of Galilee on the boat. I got off and tried to walk on the water. It sunk right beneath the damn stuff. So obviously I'm not Jesus. But what was the wildest thing is listening and watching these Christians eat all this shit up. Unbelievably. Like children. Like kindergarten kids. The Christians there, whatever a Jew tells them, they believe. Jews are all mixed up and all split up on this health bill, too. All these right-wingers that say the Jews are all together conspiring are full of crap. They fight each other like mad. They do that. The bill passed Thursday in a 2017-2013 vote almost entirely along party lines. The measure would nix tax penalties for those without health insurance and decrease state programs to ensure low-income Americans while the drug companies make millions. Billions. Among those that criticized the passage were the Reform Movement, Jewish Federations of North America, B'nai B'rith International, the National Jewish Democratic Council, and the Jewish Women International. Quote, this reverses the tremendous progress that has been made in recent years to increase the number of Americans on health insurance. We're Rabbi Jonah Pesner, director of the Reform Movement's Religious Action Center, said in a statement, we urgently call on the Senate to reject this profoundly harmful legislation, unquote. So the Jews are split down the middle on this thing. I wonder about the right wing. We strongly urge the Senate to reject the House plan, which would have negative consequences on many communities, in other words, many racial groups, including low-income seniors. Jewish Women International called it a careless, undisciplined effort by the president to make everyone think he is fulfilling a campaign pledge and it will wreak havoc on our nation, including the very people who supported him. Well, that happens all the time. Remember Woodrow Wilson had promised to keep us out of World War I, and me, right after he got into office, he declared war. That doesn't mean anything to a politician. The Republican Jewish Coalition, in contrast, praised the bill. As the legislation moves to the Senate, we hope for a swift passage so President Trump can sign it and fulfill his commitment to the American people for affordable health care, unquote, Executive Director Matthew Brooks said in a statement. Matthew Brooks, that doesn't sound very Jewish to me. So there you go. The Republican Jews support it. The Democrat Jews hate it. So what do you got to say about that, boys? They don't care who is against it, who's for it, just who is going to make money out of it. The Jews on both sides will make a fortune. It doesn't make whether against it or for it, they'll make money. Uh-oh, White House advisor and former apprentice contestant Omarosa Manigault was criticized by the Anti-Defamation League, isn't everybody? On Thursday after she said she had a good relationship with Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan and would look forward to a meeting with him, unquote. Manigault, the communications director of the White House's Office of Public Liaison, made her remarks in an interview with Chicago talk show station WVON. I think any of your audience would know that I've never shied away from having an open and I believe a good relationship with Louis Farrakhan, Manigault said. I would look forward to receiving that invitation and sitting down with him. Farrakhan has a decades-long history of making controversial remarks about the Jews. They don't say anti-Semitic. In March, he urged President Trump to extricate himself from being controlled by Jews like his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Well, Jared Kushner is a Jew, so what's the big deal? Louis Farrakhan should not be made to feel welcome by anyone in the White House, ADL CEO Jonathan Greenblatt said in a statement, such as an overture would only serve to legitimize his long record of conspiratorial and hateful views towards Jews. Now, wait a minute. He had Jews in his family. We hope that the administration will make it clear that Farrakhan and his anti-Jewish organization will find no supporters in the White House. There's always anti-Jewish supporters in the White House. They may keep their mouths shut. You know, if you've heard the Nixon tapes, he went on against the Jews. Johnson went on against the Jews. Every one of these, even the Clintons, went on against the Jews in private. They sit around the table there and tell Jewish jokes in the White House. Yes, they do. Palestinian terror cell accused of being behind at least 10 shootings at military and civilian targets in the West Bank was apprehended, with the assault rifle allegedly used in the attacks found hidden in a child's bed. Well, so what? What's wrong with that? They're guerrilla fighters. Guerrilla fighters have to hide their weapons wherever they can hide them. Three men said to be aligned with the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine were arrested. Yeah. I like guerrilla fighters. What their reason for fighting is their business. The Taliban over there in Afghanistan. I've got nothing against the Taliban. Why would I have anything against the Taliban? They're fighting in their own country for what they believe in their own land. And they're fighting people who are there that don't belong there, including U.S. troops. I just say U.S. troops should stay at home and don't send them over there. If I was in Afghanistan, I'd probably be on one side or another, Taliban, ISIS, you name it. Because I am sort of a radical guy. The Taliban got rid of the heroin planting of poppies in Afghanistan almost completely. Under U.S. support, it's back in business for cocaine and heroin flooding Europe, have flooded Europe for years. So you don't want the Taliban, huh? Well, you got millions of drug addicts now all across Europe and the United States, because the Taliban's not in charge. As far as their religious beliefs, I could give a damn less. I don't care what they believe. Some people believe in the Easter Bunny. So what? They're not messing with me. They're not trying to get me hooked on heroin. They're not invading my town. Not invading my house. They're not kicking my door in like U.S. troops did in Afghanistan and Iraq. Come on, why would I condemn the Taliban? Or for that matter, even ISIS? Because we created ISIS anyhow. There wouldn't be an ISIS without the military-industrial complex. So quit bullshitting, people. You're not bullshitting me, I'll tell you that. Well, here the Jews or Israelis are trying to cast bad thoughts on these people fighting for their land, Palestine, by saying this M16 was found in the headboard storage space of a child's bed, complete with Dora the Explorer sheets. Well, good for you. If you're going to be a gorilla or lone wolf or whatever you're going to be the best you can. Hide it wherever you can. The idea is to win the struggle. Listen to what this IDF official says. That's the military there in Israel. Quote, this cynical exploitation of hiding things in children's room is known to us, a senior IDF intelligence officer told the Times of Israel. Quote, it's not the first time and it won't be the last time that weapons are hidden in a child's room or other places where they think we won't look. Let me ask you this, Mr. Jew. Why didn't you hide a few weapons before they came to drag you away to the concentration camp? Seems to me that you'd have been pretty smart if you'd have been hiding weapons in your kid's room back then so you could resist. That's the problem. You didn't. If every time somebody come to haul you away, you blew the shit out of them, they might have changed their mind. Well, the One America movement, a faith and community-based initiative to bridge growing divisions in the U.S. society through community service and dialogue, we like that dialogue, is launching in cities across the United States with the help of Jewish service organization, Repair the World. The idea for a One America was formed late last year by Jewish, Muslim, and Christian fanatics, leaders, in response to the escalation of divisive rhetoric and behavior during and after the 2016 presidential campaign. What could be more dividing than religion? Religion's the most dividing thing that ever was. If you didn't have all this religion around, the world would be much more peaceful. One America's goal is to build human relationships across societal divisions that can address the isolation that appears to increasingly define American culture and politics. In other words, the races are not going to get along that well together. One America's work will begin with pilot projects in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and rural Pennsylvania, moving on to service networks across the country. Sounds like something that George Soros would be involved in. Participants will share a meal and a conversation after the service project, and One America will keep them in touch afterwards. Yeah. Keep an eye on them. Repair the World will connect One America with multiple service programs and networks across the county, as well as to bring One America model to the cities where Repair the World operates on the ground with local partners in Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Detroit, New York, Baltimore, and Miami. Well, won't that be a happy day? Happy day, more confusion, more people being pissed off. I don't think they're going there to bring people together at all. I think they're going there to stir the pot. The biggest joke I got yesterday was Trump signing this executive order to protect religion. Religion. What's it, about $1 billion business in the United States every year? Yeah. He's going to protect religious liberty. Well, what the hell's the problem? Where is religious liberty being attacked in this country other than jingoey type stuff? You can pray anytime you want to. You can pray, you know, I used to get a kick out of the prayer in school. Well, you can pray in school anytime you want to, because you don't have to yell from the tabletops. You just pray in your mind, you know. So that's all nonsense. Religious liberty? Oh, yeah. They don't pay any taxes now. What else can we do to make the churches richer? Everybody will want to be a big-ass preacher pretty soon. I see they finally hauled off Benny Hinn, that little guy. He's from, I don't know where he's from, India or something. He's been bullshitting the Christians for years. They finally, FBI, toted off all boxes and boxes of his records. All these guys, these big-shot evangelists, are crooked. I mean, not only do they preach a crooked story, but they are crooked themselves. How about that nigger down south who got in trouble for buying one too many jet aircraft? But, you know, might is right. If people are stupid, You're just going to have to stand aside and let them be stupid. You can't force people not to be stupid. So just laugh it off, man. Preachers are... I see these preachers on TV with, you know, thousands of people there on Sunday. And they're just going through their act, you know. Thousands of these people. Oh, man. And of course, this is a perfect example that Trump is just as big a crook as any of them. Trump, addressing religious leaders in a signing ceremony at the White House, said, quote, "We will not allow people of faith to be targeted, bullied, or silenced anymore. No one should be censoring sermons or targeting pastors," he said. I mean, talk about a tongue-in-cheek deal. Trump's order directs the Internal Revenue Service to alleviate the burden of the Johnson Amendment, the White House said in reference to the 1954 law sponsored by Lyndon Johnson, then a Texas senator who became president. Under the tax code, organizations that enjoy tax-free status, such as churches, are prohibited from participating in political campaigning or supporting any one candidate for office. And this is bullshit. I know back there in Indiana, I went to two or three meetings in churches where they had all these politicians coming in there. They didn't obey that law at all. I know the Republicans didn't, and I know the nigger Democrats didn't either. So, man, it gets so deep it takes wings to stay above it. Well, I see Texas has come out and with a law that against the law to establish sanctuary cities. And that's going to start a nationwide deal, and every asshole in the country is going to come flocking to protect the invaders, so-called migrants and so forth, sanctuary cities. What a ridiculous situation. We'll see how long that lasts. Probably the Texas Christians are all excited about it because it's going to be used against mostly Catholics coming, these Mexicans and so forth. They're Catholic. We don't want any more of those damn Catholics in here. We don't care if they're brown and greasy and rape people and kill people, but we don't want them in here. They're filthy Catholics. You know, it's even money whether the U.S. Senate is going to pass this health bill. They may squeak it through, but I have a feeling that there's going to be hell to pay in the Senate. Because you not only got all the asshole Jews in there, but you got the asshole Democrats in there, and a large share of the asshole Republicans in there, so it's going to be fun. I hope they resort to violence. I like to see senators beating the shit out of each other. American university officials... American university officials held a town hall on Tuesday in response to a recent hate crime. An unknown suspect... Now get this, boys and girls. This is really horrible. An unknown suspect hung bananas with racist remarks at several locations across the campus shortly after the institution appointed its first black student government president. Taylor Dumpson, school of... officials and local police have launched an official investigation of being called in the FBI. Get that banana guy. The racist attack was directed at the Alpha Kappa Alpha, a.k.a. sorority. Well, how do you know that? The first predominantly black Greek-lettered sorority in the U.S., which Dumpson is a member of. Several students took to social media to condemn the incident. Well, aren't those bananas? Bananas are racist. Showing solidarity with the Dumpson and the sorority using the hashtag. The bananas hung from a noose like a rope at a bus stop, a dining hall, and a undergraduate residence hall. They were etched with the words Harambe bait, a reference to the gorilla who was shot at the Cincinnati Zoo in 2016 to protect a boy who fell into the enclosure. The term has since become common racist slur, another scribble said. Gee, I never heard of it. AKA Free, referring to Dumpson Sorority. Wow, man, this is something else. Man, what worse thing could they do to a African American is hang a banana around?
More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman.
Kellogg's Pep.
P-E-P, Pep. Kellogg's Pep, the Sunshine Cereal, presents
The Adventures of Superman. Today we begin a brand new story, a story of baseball and the discovery of a menace that will lead Superman and his friends through many dangerous adventures.
Hello there, gang. This is your pal Dan McCullough. Say, have you heard about the 18-carat breakfast dish that sparkles with sunny cheerfulness? It's Kellogg's Pep, the Sunshine Cereal. Yes, sir, Pep sure is a jewel of a treat. So sunny and golden, you can hardly wait to start eating. That tender crispness gives you the old come-on, too. And when you do pitch in, what a flavor. A catchy flavor. A sunny golden toasted flavor. A top-notch royal flavor that your appetite can really latch on to. Believe me, gang, Kellogg's Pep sure is on the sunbeam when it comes to teasing your taste. Why, you wouldn't think of stopping until you've polished your bowl clean as a whistle. Which is always a smart idea, because Pep is good for you. And nowadays, it's particularly smart, because the cereal grains have been picked out to help give good nourishment to fellows and girls overseas. So, gang, get hep to Kellogg's Pep. When Mom brings Pep home from the grocer's, make sure there's no waste at your house. If you pour your own Pep, pour it carefully, and eat up every bit you pour out. Pass the word along to the rest of your family, too. Remember, eat all your Pep. Don't waste it.
Now, the adventures of Superman.
It is late afternoon. Superman, in his guise of Clark Kent, the mild-mannered reporter, is in a taxicab en route to cover an important newspaper story. He is accompanied by Cub reporter Jimmy Olsen, who, as manager of the Unity House baseball team, has been given permission to leave the office early in order to attend practice. Listen.
We won our last two games while you were out of town, Mr. Kent.
Oh, fine.
And if we win tomorrow, we'll be in the finals for the boys' championship in Metropolis.
Hey, that's great, Jim. Sounds like you're a top-notch manager.
Oh, no. Any manager could win with Tommy Lee on his team.
Who?
Tommy Lee, our pitcher. Boy, he's got everything. Speed, sweet curve, change of pace. He's terrific.
Wait a minute. Last time you were telling me about the team, your pitcher was a boy named Riggs, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, Chuck Riggs. That was before Tommy Lee moved into the neighborhood and joined Unity House.
Oh?
When Tommy showed us how he could throw that old baseball, Chuck had to move over.
Well, it was kind of tough on Chuck, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. But if Tommy's a better pitcher, he deserves the job, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, yes, of course. All other things being equal.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean baseball is a team game, Jim.
You remember Pep. Breakfast cereal, it was like eating dry grass. Kellogg's has made billions off crap food, crap cereal, and who knows what else. So it figures that they be the sponsor of Superman, Super Jew. Well, Yale University Conference is soliciting papers comparing the racist right to the previous racist groups like conservatives and authoritarian religious and nationalist groups. Wow. The fifth annual conference of the International Consortium for Research on Anti-Semitism and Racism will focus specifically on racism, anti-Semitism, anti-Jewism, and the radical right. What happened to the radical left? They're not in there. There's plenty of anti-Semites in the radical left, implying that the recent increase in anti-Semitism is a conservative phenomenon. So what? The conference set for September will be hosted by the Yale Program for the Study of Anti-Semitism and the Center for Study of Race, Incidentally and Transnational Migration. Well, these guys can use some big words, man. Organizers recently put out a call of papers and asked applicants to focus their work on the alt-right. and other far right wing groups that have emerged from the recent political events. Recent political events in the United States have turned the spotlight on what for many years has been a shadowy phenomenon, the existence of an openly racist and anti-Semitic, Islamophobic, homophobic, and misogynistic groups on the far right wing of the American political spectrum. The prompt begins then alleging that far right groups are responsible for the increase in hate crimes since the presidential election. No, I think your military industrial complex is responsible for the biggest hate crimes. They're hate criming the hell out of Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan. What's more hateful than bombing people's houses and killing them? That's pretty hateful if you ask me. It never seems to be a hate law against these people in power. What's that all about? The prompt asks applicants to address a series of questions on the topic, including one that calls conservative, religious, and nationalist groups racist movements akin to the KKK and Nazi. Well, that may be true. There's a lot of those Hollywood Nazis in all the churches. What are their links to previous racist movements, the KKK and the Nazi Party? Doesn't anyone ever tell these people there hasn't been a Nazi party in this country since, a real Nazi party, since George Lincoln Rockwell? Because he did run for office. None of the other Hollywood Nazi groups have done anything like that. Conservative and authoritarian religious and nationalistic groups, and so on. It asks, what kind of racism and anti-Semitism do they advocate? Well, the loving kind, of course, the peaceful kind. Which groups of people do they target and why? They target politicians and crooked bankers. Wait a minute. Campus Reform reached out to the conference organizers for additional comment on the event, but did not receive a response in time for publication, which means they didn't want to talk to you. I'm thrilled to death that the conservatives are carrying our water. They're not us. But they're carrying our water. You know, they'd be called Nazis and Klan and everything else. Wow, that's funny. That's funny, honey. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. This was Thursday, right? I forgot to play my Thursday stuff. Anyhow, I'll be back with you tomorrow on Freya's Day. Ladies' Day in the bunker, okay? Now, if you think I'm being too funny and causing you to laugh too much, well, I'm sorry, but I'm just that kind of guy. I think anti-Semitism is funny. I think racism is funny. I think being phobic, like all those things that are phobic, I like. Some of my best friends are phobic. Yeah. I want to dedicate this tune to close out the show to our Presidente, the great white hope of the Hollywood races. Yeah, here we go. Here we go. Whoop. Whoop.
Big John. Big John.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6 foot six and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Nobody seemed to know where John called home. He just drifted into town and stayed all alone. He didn't say much, he kind of quiet and shy. And if you spoke at all, you just said hi to Big John. Somebody said he came from New Orleans, where he got in a fight over a Cajun queen and a crashing blow from a huge right hand sent a Louisiana fella to the promised land, Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Then came the day at the bottom of the mine when a timber cracked and men started crying. Miners were praying and hearts beat fast, and everybody thought that they'd breathed their last, except John. Through the dust and the smoke of this man-made hell walked a giant of a man that the miners knew well, grabbed a sagging timber and gave out with a groan, and like a giant oak tree just stood there alone, Big John.
Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
And with all of his strength he gave a mighty shove. Then a miner yelled out, "There's a light up above." And 20 men scrambled from a would-be grave. Now there's only one left down there to save, Big John. With jacks and timbers they started back down. Then came that rumble way down in the ground, and as smoke and gas belched out of that mine, everybody knew it was the end of the line for Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Now they never reopened that worthless pit. They just placed a marble stand in front of it. These few words are written on that stand: at the bottom of this mine lies one hell of a man, Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Big Bad Donald. Big Bad Donald, he's a Masada man. He went to the top of the hill and he proclaimed he was the... Wait a minute. Get out of here, Metzger.